Tweet at Today SOR.
Mick Ryan was just 2 weeks away from his 40th birthday when he was one of 157 passengers on an Ethiopian Airlines flight from Addis Ababa to Nairobi when it crashed shortly after takeoff on the 10th of March this year, killing everyone on board. The plane was a Boeing 737 MAX. Aviation regulators and airlines grounded all aircraft after that crash, the second in the space of just 4 months. Mick, or Michal as he was known in his native Lahinch in County Clare, worked for the UN World Food Programme. He was a father of two, a husband, a son, a brother and a friend to very many people. Mick's wife Nisha and his mother Christine are with me now in studio. Good morning to you both. Thank you indeed for coming in. Christine, if I can start with yourself, just remind us about your son Mick. What was he like as a child?
As far as I'm concerned, he was absolutely adorable. He had such enthusiasm for life. He was very protective towards his family. He thought really he was invincible, because I remember one time we bought him a present of a suit and he thought he was Superman, and he jumped off of a big wall and fell and hurt his head and was bleeding for hours and hours. He was very involved in sport.
What age was he when that happened, by the way?
Three. He was 3 years of age, yeah.
So he was a bit of an adventurer from the off.
He was always like... always up to something and always doing something, always involved, whether in sport or whatever. He played a lot of golf and represented the club in junior golf and in Lahinch. And he also was involved in hurling, and he had 2 county medals for hurling and so on. He went with enthusiasm for whatever he was doing.
And at what stage did he show interest or show an interest in working maybe in a humanitarian area, working with and for other people?
Well, believe it or not, even when he was a student in Galway doing his civil engineering, and I mean, students didn't have money. I mean, students still don't have money. He always contributed towards organisations like different organisations that helped others in Third World and so on, CONCERN and other organisations like that. He always made a contribution every year, every month towards them, and was always involved in, you know, helping others. And we always knew he was going to do something like that, and he was involved. He loved the idea of civil engineering. His ambition was to build the biggest bridge that was ever built. And he seemed to go down that route eventually.
And Nisha, he was already qualified as a civil engineer. I think he studied in Galway before you met him.
Yeah, that's right. We met in UCC when he was doing a postgrad. So we met on the stairs one day, introduced by a mutual friend. There was just this guy in front of me, a surfer guy with a big head of blonde hair and cheeky grin. And yeah, we just, from the moment we met, we just clicked, and it was
You were an engineer yourself. You are
That's
an
right.
engineer.
Yeah.
So was it the case then that you were postgrad students together and then kind of went working in different places?
That's right. I suppose from the moment Mick and I kind of met, and we both had very kind of clear visions of what we wanted to do and where we wanted to go with, you know, our careers and stuff. And so, yeah, it meant... you know, it meant travel, and it meant long-distance relationship, and a lot of moving around, a lot of expensive phone calls.
Yeah, I think he at one stage was working on the Port Tunnel in Dublin.
That's right.
You were still in Cork.
Yeah.
And at what stage then did he start to go working on foreign trips and projects?
It was after the Port Tunnel, actually. He headed off to Afghanistan, so that was probably in about 2004, I think. And he just had this yearn to go have adventure and to head off to faraway lands.
Did you go with him?
Oh no. at that stage I was following my own kind of path, and so I was still based in Cork, and you know, kind of doing like training and work experience and that sort of thing. So he headed off and started working with the UN from that point. Yeah.
Right, and at what stage did it become obvious that this was where he wanted to spend his working life effectively?
Very early on. Like, he was in Afghanistan, and within a few weeks, like, we'd be talking on the phone, and he just loved it. He loved the people, he loved the place, the excitement, the work in particular, just it just really, it really caught hold of him.
Yeah, and Christine, did you have a concern or a fear even that your son was going to places where there was a lot of danger by virtue of the work he was doing and also where he was going?
I was always concerned about it, and so was Nisha, really. We were always concerned about him when he was in Afghanistan. There was an earthquake, you know, he had witnessed different things happening in all of these countries, in South Sudan and everywhere else. He went to Ebola, and he was open to a lot of things. But we never thought that anything would happen to him. We weren't concerned about him on the trip that he was on from Addis to Nairobi, because we thought that was just an ordinary, safe trip. We didn't expect anything to happen there, but he was in many dangerous places before that where anything could have happened.
Yeah, Anisha, before we talk about that awful event last March, tell me more about how you came to be married, and then I think you settled in Rome. That was where he was essentially based.
Yeah, I suppose we married in 2007. And, you know, it was, he was back and forth between, like he worked for a while in Ireland and we were both based in Ireland. And then he just, the wanderlust, or, you know, the yearn to kind of be doing this kind of work again, you know, came on him, and he headed off to Ethiopia then in 2012, I think it was. And it was, you know, it was just back and forth all the time. And then eventually in 2015, he did the Ebola, like Chris said. He was in Liberia for about 6 weeks, the maximum time that they were allowed to be there at the time. And he got a call from Rome to say they wanted him in head office. Because the work he had done in with the Ebola stuff had been quite unprecedented, and it was quite incredible. It was just something then. Things just started to build and build then in terms of the work he was doing and being in Rome. But again, it was he came back for a bit to Ireland for about a year, and then we both headed off again to Rome in about 2017.
So. Right, and then two young people arrived into your family, had two little babies.
Separately. So I have a 4-year-old and now a 1-year-old. So, yeah.
So take me back to the 10th of March this year. How did you hear about that crash?
So I was in the house in Cork, Cork City. I was by myself with the two kids, because at this stage, Mick was doing a lot of travelling, and I had a very young baby. I had family around me in Cork and stuff, so it made sense that I was in Cork. And I knew he was travelling. And that morning, I got a missed call from a friend in Rome, and a few messages saying, you know, have you seen the news? Please call me, this sort of thing. So I rang my friend back, thinking, you know, maybe something was wrong in Rome, or something was wrong with him. And that's when he told me, he said, Nisha, have you seen the news? And I said, no. And he said, a plane has gone down that was heading from Addis to Nairobi. And my first reaction was, I was like, no, this can't be Mick, you know, it's not possible. But yeah, it was confirmed about an hour later.
Did you know he was on that flight?
Well, at this point, when I was talking to my friend, we didn't have any, there was no clear information. Mm-hmm. But we both felt, because I had sent him a text message early that morning that I could see had sent but not delivered. And I had received a message from him in the middle of the night saying he was boarding the flight. So, yeah, it was, it wasn't clear, but definitely all the indications were that he was on it.
And in your case, Christine, what did you hear, or how did you hear?
Well, I heard it on the news in the morning, first of all, that a plane had gone down on that journey, and I knew he was on that journey, but I put it out of my mind, because I said surely there were several flights going and he couldn't possibly have been on it. And then Nisha rang me, and I still didn't make the connection. And Nisha said that she thought he was on it, and I said, well, you're not sure. So, you know, make sure, you know, maybe he's not on it. So she said, I'll ring you back in Ohio. So she got confirmation then that he was actually on it and rang me back. So that's all I knew.
A terrible realisation, and people will remember, I think, you were on Morning Ireland the following day with, I think it was Tommy Mescal, speaking very warmly about Mick, obviously, but also you managed to be incredibly together, if I can put it like that, having got such terrible news.
Yeah, I'd say he gave me the strength to do it, really. Mm-hmm. You know, that he gave me the strength to do it. I wouldn't have been able to do it otherwise without the strength that he had given me to talk about. I wanted people to know, as far as I was concerned, how great a guy he was, and
yeah,
you know, what had happened to us wrong.
Of course, one of the awful aspects of this is that you haven't been able to have a funeral, a proper funeral with a body, a coffin that you can reverence, and you can have the normal kind of ways and ceremonies that we have to say farewell to people. How difficult has that been for you, Nisha?
Trying to get my head around it was the first thing, and just trying to come to terms with it. We, for a long time afterwards, we had discussed about what do we do, you know, in this situation, and it's impossible to know. And then eventually a very good friend got in touch and suggested a paddle out with surfing, and that's eventually got the ball rolling, where we just said we wanted to do something that celebrated his life, because Mick was the light of our lives, and mm-hmm. he was, to us, he was just incredible. So we just felt we had to celebrate him and his life in some way.
Yeah, and Christine, you went to Ethiopia, to the crash site.
I did, yeah.
Why did you do that, and how soon after the crash did you go?
It was within a week. It was about maybe 5 or 6 days afterwards, and my other son, Tiernan, came with me. I felt I had to go. I wanted to go. I felt his spirit was still there, and I felt that he'd have known that I'd be the one that would go, you know, if we needed to go, or if we felt we needed to go. And I went out there and I spoke to him as I wanted to say what I wanted to say to him, and I felt that he had a certain sense of peace, and I had a certain sense of peace from being there, even though the area like was, you know, very traumatic. And but I feel I spoke to him, and it really helped me, as far as I'm concerned.
Yeah, and Nisha, with the two children, obviously the baby is probably too young, or was too young, to understand anything. But your older child, how did you go about trying to explain the loss of her dad?
Oh God, it's impossible to put words in it. But it was like, she's a smart girl, and both Chris and I felt that she knew something was wrong. I can't explain how or why, but on the day it she just had this way about her that she was talking about her daddy all day long, and a few days later, Chris came down to Cork, and we both attempted to tell her on that particular day. And each time we tried, she would talk over us. It was like she didn't want to hear what we had to say. And then finally, it was towards the end of that week. I sat down with her. There was a kind of a quiet moment, and I said the words to her that her daddy was gone, and that he wasn't coming back. She screamed and ran out of the room. And it was the most heartbreaking thing that I've ever had to do in my life.
I think anybody listening to you can only try to imagine. Anybody who hasn't been through that kind of ordeal or that kind of tragedy or sadness, I suspect will barely comprehend what you've had to do. Were you there at the time as well, Christine?
I was, yeah. I was with Nisha and Serla. We both felt, as Nisha said, knew it already, or knew something was wrong or something had happened. She used to talk to her dad nearly every day on Skype. And when this had happened, you know, she just knew. She's a very sensitive child and very bright child, and she just picks up on things and on feelings. Yeah. And we felt that she had known something.
And how has she been since?
God, the first couple of months were really, really tough. But she's got some kind of inner strength or something from somewhere, where it was almost like she was guiding me in terms of what we needed to do. And yeah, we ended up going back to Rome and ended up staying there. I suppose my initial intention wasn't to stay there for as long as I did. She had said to me one day, she said, "Mammy, I want to go to school in big school here." And
this is here in Rome.
In Rome, yeah. Because her dad had constantly been talking to her about, you know, the big school that where she was going to go. And she said it to me one day, and so I said okay, and we went in, met with the teachers, and it was the best thing that could have happened, because it was kind of it brought structure to her life.
And you've now decided, I gather, Nisha, that you're going to go back to Rome, at least, is it for a year?
Yeah. Again, the main driver would be Sarah, and just having that structure there. But also, we've got amazing friends and fantastic support over there. So it's kind of where I feel, you know, it was the beginning and the end of something, and it just kind of feels like I just want to continue that for a bit longer, you know.
Yeah, and something that happened, Christine, in the last several days, last week I think it was, there was news came out about DNA sampling that had been done on whatever remains they were able to find. And just tell me about that and the impact, and how you found out about it, the impact that it had on you.
Oh my God, Sean, that was absolutely amazing. We heard, it was so upsetting. It was reported in the African News on Wednesday, the 11th of September, that the Commissioner General of the Ethiopian Federal Police, they had identified all of the human remains from the crash, and that was complete. We hadn't heard anything about it. Then on Thursday, the 12th of September, the print media in Ireland had an article about remains being found and every person on board being identified. We still hadn't heard anything official about it. We contacted the Irish embassy in Dublin, who hadn't got official confirmation, even though in the media it was suggested that all families had been, it was said that all families had been notified about it. We had not been notified about it. They said all embassies had been notified. They were not notified about it. In fact, on Wednesday, the 11th of September, or even up to last Friday, believe it or not, we still have not got official confirmation from the Irish embassy. They have not received official confirmation regarding DNA. So it has been a terrible roller coaster.
So, Nisha, you must be left wondering what you're going to get back.
Yeah. Trying not to think about, I suppose, the details of that in some ways, but it's horrendous, absolutely horrendous. And how we found out and how we were told, I can't put words in it, to be honest with you.
Because the question arises, I suppose, do you have another funeral? Do you have a funeral with remains? Yeah. Or how? I mean, I don't want to be overly intrusive, forgive me. Have you thought about that?
Not really, no. I suppose we're taking it day by day at the moment. The only thing I can say is we'll cross that bridge if and when it comes to that.
The one sense I get from you both, though, is that there's something about the spirit of Mick Ryan that is still there, that lives on, from which you draw strength and inspiration.
Absolutely. I mean, for us, that's what he's around us all the time. He's you know, telling us to keep going. For me, he's just there all the time. You know, and he's our strength, I suppose, at the moment. Yeah,
he guided all the family, and he was a leader in the family. He always looked out for all of us and tried to get us to go on the path he thought we should go on. He was, you know, he was just concerned for all of his family. He was protective of his family, and he just listened and always wanted the best for us, and always wanted to know what was happening with everyone. And he was a role model for us, and, you know, he was our protector as well.
And Christine, you have a big family occasion coming up next weekend.
Yeah, next
No doubt you'll feel his presence there as well.
I will definitely, yeah. I will. It will be tinged with sadness, but it's a happy day for my other son, so I have to...
He's getting married,
yeah.
Well, look, I hope the event goes really well. Obviously, as you say, it's going to be bittersweet. Mm. Thank you so much indeed, Christine and Aoife, for coming in.
Thank you.
May Mick rest in peace.
Today with Sean O'Rourke on RTE Radio 1.